Mitzvah Tavchaf Hey 425 Mitzvahs Harigas Shiva Amamin, the mitzvah that we have to kill the seven Canaanite nations that lived in Eretz Yisrael at the time of the conquest. Laharog Shiva Amamim Hamachazikim Beartseinu Terem Kovshenu Osa Mehem, that we don't just conquer it and then exert our control over the land. Before we get to that step, we have to make sure that these seven nations who are really causing us problems must be out of the way. V'heim ha-Kenani v'ha-Mori v'ha-Girgoshi v'ha-Chivi v'ha-Yevusi v'ha-Chiti. Was that seven? I might be missing one. And the Kahira just says Kenani v'ha-Mori and then v'chule.
Yeah, it's better. Okay, right.
What?
The Chiti, the
Gagashi,
the Prizi, the...
Oh, Prizi. I missed
right.
The Prizi. Yes,
right.
Yes,
and
yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Lula abdam b'chol makom shenim tzaim. We got to get rid of them in any place that they may be found. Shnemar leim hacharim tacharim osam. You shall totally destroy them, put them to the sword, get rid of them, etc. V'nichbelo ha-mitzvah b'seder shoftin. This appears again a few parshas from now. Shnemar sham ki acharim tacharimim achiti v'amori, etc., etc. All these seven nations. So these seven nations are the epitome of why we have to conquer the land, because they are the source of all evil and wickedness in Eretz Yisrael. And there's a difference between these seven and Amalek. That Amalek is sort of the enemy of the Jewish people anywhere. They're the more universal enemy. These seven nations were specifically an impediment to our imposing the proper rules and religious governance of Eretz Yisrael at the time of the conquest. Mishorshi ha-mitzvah lefi she'elu ha-shiva amamin hem she'echelu la'asos kol mini avodazar v'chol to'avas Hashem asher sonei. These are the people who originated avodazar, not necessarily they were the first ones ever to worship avodazar, but they're the ones that brought avodazar to Eretz Yisrael and were spreading it. V'alkein biyosam ikar avodazar v'yesoda ha-rishon Nitztavinu aleihem limchosam ula'abdam mitachas hashamayim. We have to erase them and destroy them from under the heavens. Lo yizachru v'lo yipakdu be'eretz achayim. They should not be remembered in the land of the living. U'mitzvaseinu zos aleihem la'achrimim yimtza lanu to'eles. That there will be an advantage to us. That is to our advantage to adhere to this mitzvah. That the main point vis-a-vis the Jewish people and killing the Shiva Amamin is that we shouldn't learn from them. That there was a very strong chance that if these nations would remain alive in Eretz Yisrael, then even if somehow they would make peace with us and there would be little enclaves, there would be Girgashi reservations within Eretz Yisrael, that their presence would infiltrate our minds. Yeah.
So unlike Amalek, wherever Amalek is, obviously, whenever it wasn't originally Eretz Yisrael anyway, you know,
right?
That we have to destroy him. That if you had some Girgashi who happened to be off in Chicago or something like that, you would have no obligation to.
That's an excellent, excellent question. That's actually a Machlokes Rishonim.
Yeah.
That the way that Sefer Chinuch presents it, as I'll clearly say later, is that it's analogous to Amalek, that you're supposed to destroy them anywhere. But other Rishonim write that it's specifically at a time of milchama, when there's a war of conquest of Eretz Yisrael, that you have to destroy them. And also that they have to be in Eretz Yisrael. If Girgashi, that's why I think that when it talks about in Sefer Yehoshua, that it talks about these nations. So I think it doesn't mention their Girgashi. So there's some of the commentators say that the reason is that their Girgashi fled Eretz Yisrael at the time. Oh. That Yeshua sent warnings.
I just have to pick the that one out of the seven. I didn't know there was any special
Yeah. So they the one out of the seven. So they fled Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, now that they're living in Turkey or something, so you're not required. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they really are. That was just an example. So you're not required to kill them there, because they knew that that's how they were going to preserve their lifestyle and save themselves. It also should be noted that although it's a little bit of discussion among the Rishonim as well, that the Rambam writes, and it seems to be accepted as normative, that all these mitzvahs to destroy people it's always subject to their choice. So it's a little bit more PC. That it's not just genocide, that you happen to be born in a particular tribal group, so therefore you're subject to be killed, but rather you have the choice of becoming a ger toshav. Oh. That even Amalek, the Rambam writes, right, it maybe disagrees, but the Rambam writes that the first thing, before you don't just go into a Girgashi city, Chivi city, whatever, and you just start killing everyone, first you say, you know, we'd like you to become ger toshav. Here are the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach. And if you want to observe the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach, so then you can continue living in Eretz Yisrael, just like any other ger toshav. So it's only if they refuse to become a ger toshav that they're subject to the requirement to be destroyed.
So the only actual restrictions then on how you can accept as a ger would be the Moav and Mizraim, right? Or is that,
Anyone can be so they can become a ger toshav.
Well, it's a problem with Rus right now.
The Rus is a ger tzedek, so there's the question of any nation can become a ger toshav. Okay. That's not a problem. The issue is who converting to Judaism. Mm-hmm. So any nation similarly can convert to Judaism. The question is whom they're allowed to marry. So an Ammoni and a Moavi, again, the accepted tradition is that the restriction against Ammonim and Moavim does not apply to females. That's why Ruth was allowed to marry Boaz. But even assuming it's a male Ammoni and Moavi that who converts to Judaism, so he is simply, he could be Jewish, he could get an Aliyah, he could lane the Megillah, whatever, and he would simply not be allowed to marry a born Jew, that's all. But then you have the Mitzri and the Adomi, who are only excluded for 3 generations. Uh-huh. So the first generation that converts first generation that converts and the grandchildren would not be allowed to marry born Jews. But after that, they would be allowed. There's always a possibility. The question is whom you're allowed to marry. That we should not turn towards Avodah Zarah. If we have the idea that we're supposed to kill anyone who worships Avodah Zarah, it's not in any time in any place that you kill people who worship Avodah Zarah. But if we have this idea that at least in Eretz Yisrael you have these nations that epitomize Avodah Zarah and you're required to kill them, so that means you're going to develop a very negative view of Avodah Zarah, which is what the Torah wants for all Jews. Again, nowadays we hardly have a Yetzirah for Avodah Zarah, but in those days there was a very strong Yetzirah for Avodah Zarah. It was very necessary to take extreme measures to prevent the taiva, the desire for Avodah Zarah, from taking root. Vein lishol klal lama nivru ha'umos arosa ilu achar shesofan li'avid legamri min ha'olam. So you could ask a question, a philosophical question. Why did God create the 7 nations if their destiny was merely to be destroyed? Kivar yadanu shereshus nesuna biyadu shaladam li'os tov v'ras. So when God first created these 7 nations, they were not pre-programmed to become the paradigm of Ovdei Avodah Zarah. They could have become extremely righteous, and then they could have, if they were just basically observed the 7 mitzvahs but Noach on their own, they could have just stayed in Eretz Yisrael happily, and the Jews would have marched in and taken over, and they would say, "Yay, Jews!" But that was not the case. And God does not force us to do one way or the other; that we have free will. The Achar Shekein Neamar Kishiva Amam Meelu Kilkelu Maaseihem Virshiu Achenischayivu Kulam. Avdon Vamaves, that it was purely the choice of these nations that their behavior deteriorated so much, they choose to behave in such a corrupt way that they deserve it. Uvitchilas habriya hayuruin gam letova. But at the beginning of creation, they could have been, they could have chosen to be righteous. Ve'el hatam azeh nismoch mitzvahs kilyon ha-molek shebeseder. So we're going to apply this reasoning also to Amalek. The Amalek could have chosen to be righteous, but they didn't. So they got what they did. They get what they deserved. Maybe at one point in history they were righteous. And because of that short time that they acted righteously, they merited to be created. Olai namar sheyetze mibein kulam adam echad hagon mishvilo zachu kulam libaru. So maybe one day, one Yevusi descendant who manages to escape will become a very righteous person. So therefore, the whole nation was zocha to be created because of this. They will be the progenitors of this this one righteous person. So we don't know exactly why, but these are potential reasons. So we know that there was a high Roman official, some associated with being a Roman emperor, who was buddies with Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. They engaged in interesting philosophical arguments. So Antoninus was a descendant of Amalek. And it doesn't say that in the Gemara, actually. But
Marcus Aurelius claims, but yeah.
Okay, yeah. Okay. Right.
People, you know, maybe say candidate that. Candidate for somebody who, you know, is.
So he was a descendant of Esav, at least, even though Amalek was also descendant of Esav, but he was at least descendant of Esav, and according to Sefer Chinuch, a descendant of Amalek as well, and he was a good person, and according to some sources, he eventually converted to Judaism. So maybe the whole nation of Amalek was created in order that it should produce Antoninus. It's just it's hard to imagine all the Jewish people suffered with Amalek throughout the generations that Antoninus would have justified it. But there could have been other reasons as well. Vein min hanimna itzal bori livros kama bnei adam bishvil echad. That maybe God sometimes creates many people in order for one to affect one person. That it's not much effort for God to do these things, so God wants a certain result, so it's okay, he can create a lot of people. Only God knows the reasons of exactly what the influence a certain number of people have on a one person who's really the goal of the creation over here, that maybe he needs the influence of some bad people and some good people and some people telling him X and Y and Z in order to have the full effect that the righteous person is going to have in the world. Oh, Nemar Shenivru Kedei Shehikru Me'amusar B'nei Ha'olam. Or maybe the whole reason of the creation of these nations was in order to be an example to the nations of the world, that they say that these people are, the Jews are commanded to kill them because they're so bad, so we need to improve our behavior. Even if we're not subject to the technical requirement that the Jews are supposed to kill us, we still want to behave better. We see that this is the ultimate bad, so we want to take a lesson from that. Okay, they shivnu arim vitu ganos uchramim liYisrael. Or maybe it's because when they were really good at planting vineyards and building cities. So God wanted it all to be ready when the Jews came into Eretz Yisrael. So even though they were really bad people, they were really good at these things, so they fulfilled their purpose. B'dini ha-mitzvah, ma-sha'am ru-zicharnam livracha, she'ein melech Yisrael nilcham t'chilo ala milchemes mitzvah, she'i milchemes shiva amamim v'hanizkarim milchemes amalek. So in halacha, we have two categories of mitzvah, milchama, of war. One is the Milchames Mitzvah, a required mitzvah, which is that a Jewish king is required to lead the nation in battle against the arch enemies of the Jewish people, meaning the seven nations of Canaan, and against Amalek. Umilchames Ezras Yisrael Mitzar Sheba Aleihem. And if there's a part of the Jewish people that's under attack, then it's also considered a Milchames Mitzvah. Milchames Elu Eino Tzarech Litol Rishus Mi Bezdin. That for the king to engage in this type of war, he doesn't need to consult with the Sanhedrin. He can just go ahead and do it. What does he need to consult with the Sanhedrin for? A milchemes rishus, an optional mitzvah. This is when the king just wants to expand the territory of Eretz Yisrael or do something that's not absolutely halachically required and go to war because of that. Then that was subject to the approval of the Sanhedrin, and the king is not allowed to do that without the approval of the Sanhedrin. The Yeser Pratem Evarim, the rest of the details are explained in various places in Chazal. Now, there's a major difference between Milchemes Mitzvah and Milchemes Rishus, which is who gets drafted. The Chazal have an interesting lashon that for Milchemes Rishus, so you have all these exemptions that are found in Parshas Shoftim. That who built a new house and who planted a new vineyard and who just got married is exempt from the war. That's talking about in Milchemes Rishus. But for Milchemes Mitzvah, so everyone goes to war, even a chasen and kala, it says in Chazal.
And Kala?
And Kala. So what does that mean?
Wait, she is the one.
Gius Bonos. Does that mean Gius Bonos? We know that our sages did not look favorably on the institution of drafting women to the army. And in fact, it's according to many interpretations, it's what killed the Chazon Ish and the Briskerov. That they got so aggravated over the possibility that the Israeli army, they both died in the early 50s. So when this was this fight was going very strong, so the question was the Israeli army going to draft women? So the Chachamim felt extremely strongly that this was totally improper, partially because that women don't go to war in Judaism, and even for a Milchemes Mitzvah. So according to the probably the simpler understanding. Is that women did not actually do the fighting, but rather they were like in secular wars until recently, nurses. Mm-hmm. They cooked the food in the army camps and they treated the sick, but they didn't actually do the fighting. So then they proposed a compromise called Sherut Le'umi, which many Dati Le'umi girls do in Israel, that they don't actually go to the army, but they have to do national service. That they, teach, or they help with, public works projects or things that they can work on. I don't know. There are various things that could help the country as opposed to being in the actual army. So even this, the Haredi Gedolim, I don't want to put them too much in categories. I don't think some of the Dati Lumi rabbis are so thrilled with it either, but they were totally opposed to this as well, completely opposed. Because they said it's just simply absolute pritzus for a girl, young woman, to be in the domain of someone other than her her husband or her father. That so I don't know what they'd say. Maybe a women who young women who get apartments in Washington Heights and live alone without. It's still not as bad because they're not under someone else's domain. At least they're still. Viewed as they're still connected to there.
I could say it's worse. I mean, because you can say that there's a discipline inherent, so you, as long as you control the army.
Yeah, right. There's nobody around who says that you can be, court-martialed for, fraternization, as they
phrase. Here, it's...
So anyway, it's not so pushed. So the Briskerov and the Chazon Ish were leading the fight against Gius Banos, the drafting of women for Sherut Le'umi, and they got so aggravated by this possibility that they both simply died from the stress.
Modern day Israel, is that considered Milchemes Mitzvah?
That's an excellent question. Is fighting in the Israeli army nowadays considered a Milchemes Mitzvah? So, it would seem to be that the answer would be yes, unless you go with a really extreme Satmar view that the State of Israel shouldn't exist at all, so obviously protecting it is not a mitzvah. But if you assume that the State of Israel has some right to exist, which even Haredi people generally assume, that it's not a violation of the Shlosha Shavuos. That the Gemara talks about how God made the Jewish people take an oath not to conquer Eretz Yisrael with force. So some people say it's just but it's an agadah, so not necessarily paskin la'alacha. But the simple understanding is that even if that is an actual halachic requirement that we're not allowed to take Eretz Yisrael with force, the Gemara adds a very important caveat that has to be that correspondingly the nations of the world are not allowed to treat us too badly. So if we're being too severely persecuted, so then we are allowed to take Eretz Yisrael with force. And certainly, since the United Nations agreed to the establishment of the State of Israel, that is done with a permission, so it's not totally by force, so then seemingly that should be permissible. Again, Samar doesn't go like that. Okay, but that's even in the Haredi view. I mean, they feel, of course, that the state of Israel should be more halachically grounded. But in theory, there's no problem with having a Jewish state, even in the normative Haredi worldview. So according to that, it should be a milchames mitzvah.
And if it is a milchames mitzvah, can't women be in it?
No, they would say that the simple understanding is that women are not supposed to actually fight, that they're supposed to be supporting personnel. But they would also argue that in the current state of the army, where there's not a sufficient religious infrastructure, this applies to men as well. That's why Haredi young men often, usually, do not go to the army. In addition to this idea that Torah study is as important to the Jewish people as fighting in the actual army, which may be true to an extent, but not to the that doesn't mean that every single Haredi person should be learning full time. That's really doesn't make too much sense. But most people are not cut out for it. It's only a minority that really is learning properly and really blossoming into to the next gedolim in the yeshiva system. Okay, that's a whole discussion. But even assuming so that's why they stay in learning, even not going to the army, because it's extremely threatening religiously to go to the army. The atmosphere in the army is very anti-religious and has a very negative impact on them. If the religious standards in the army would rise, then more Haredim will go to the army.
Well, there are these special units, so...
Right, Nachal Haredi. There's something called Nachal Haredi, which very few actual Haredim go to. It's more serious than Tilumi people. Yeah, it's a double-edged sword. Some people feel that when they go to the army, it challenges their religiosity, and they grow stronger because of it. Okay, but that's not the norm. Normally, we assume people should not go into situations that challenge their religiosity, like a secular college. Mm-hmm. Also not so pashut, that if a Jew stam wants to go to secular college, so then it's not so clear that it should be permissible. If there's there's a Jew that's destined to be the next the greatest engineer in the world, and there's a certain university that has an engineering program, and he's very focused on the, or she is very focused on the engineering aspect of it, then maybe there is a reason that one would allow someone to go to secular college. But stam, because they feel like studying all these things, liberal arts and this and that, and having the experience of going to college, so that's that really should not be permissible.
But a hesder yeshiva is probably better, right? Because that's like...
A hesder yeshiva is definitely better than going straight to the army, yeah.
I'm saying it's under religious...
While they're in the yeshiva, while they're in the army, they're mixed, I think, with other soldiers. So I think, I mean, as far as I know, the vast majority of people who are in Hesder come out of Hesder staying from. But I don't know the whole statistics exactly what happens to people while they're in Hesder. It's a very complicated discussion. It's not much it.
But also, I think that's a very committed group. That's not everybody. I mean,
Hesder program. Why? It's not a small group, though. The whole national...
No, I don't mean... Yeah. I mean, you pick it specifically because you're committed to that idea.
I mean, isn't it, I thought it's a natural continuation. If you grow up, that's Tilumi, so don't you just go to Hesder Yeshiva? I don't think so.
I don't think so. Oh, no? I don't know. All right. We don't know people like that.
Uh-huh. Okay. Venoeges mitzvah zo bizachar munikevos. This applies to females because the Sefer Chinuch holds that it doesn't only apply in the context of a mitzvah of a war, but even if it would only apply in the context of a war, it would be a milchemes mitzvah, in which case women would participate in some way. And if a chiti comes to her, she's even a nurse, and she comes to her nursing station, says, "Please treat me." Maybe she has to. Instead of treating him, off him. Medical malpractice, I would say, but okay, though, in this situation. That we have the possibility of killing them, so that's what you do. So the Rambam has a principle that he only includes in the count of mitzvahs that are eternally applicable. But mitzvahs that were, for example, applicable only in the desert, like certain ways that the Levium had to transport the vessels of the Mishkan. So that doesn't count as one of the 613 mitzvahs. So the Rambam says, but this is, might not be an eternal mitzvah because it was only at the time of conquering Eretz Yisrael. So why am I counting this in the Minyan mitzvahs? Achar sheshiva alamim kvar avdu. Not just because only in the first time of Eretz Yisrael. Everybody agrees that there would still be a chitim living in Eretz Yisrael nowadays, and would the Jews would be reconquering the state of Israel, we'd have to kill all the chitim if they didn't want to become gerei toshav. But it's more importantly, chitim and girgashim no longer exist.
Yeah, isn't yeah. a general principle that you know that the various peoples were mentioned, you know, from yeah. Chumash, you know, that now we know.
Basan Chiriv, that when the Assyrian Empire expanded over the ancient Near East, they conducted a policy of taking people from their native lands and sending them all over. That's why they exiled the 10 tribes, and that's why the 10 tribes
assimilated.
That's why we don't have any record of who exactly they are, whereas the Yehudim, the Jews who remained in Eretz Yisrael, stayed strong, and then they were exiled by the Babylonians, so they maintained their identity because they didn't have the same policy. So the Assyrians sent everyone everywhere. So Basan Cheiro Vilbal Eskola Umos, that's why that all the nations that are mentioned in the Tanakh, really, we assume no longer exist as such. That's why nowadays anyone who converts, even if someone's from Jordan, what Jordan is, Ammon, right? Not that it used to be. It's that's why the capital of Jordan is called Amman.
Mm-hmm.
Ammon, really? That's why that's the ancient city of Rabat Ammon. So even if someone comes from Amman and is say, wait, maybe I'm an Ammoni. No, you're not an Ammoni. You're a Jordanian. We have no record of mm-hmm. you're not an Ammoni. You're all the also the Muslim conquest, of course, all the Arabs inhabited all these places. So they're not really an Ammoni.
Ephraim, though, because there you have a much more.
But the Muslims, Arabs moved there also. Everyone.
Okay, so there too.
Yeah. They're not pure-blooded ancient Egyptians. They may be descended in some way, but there's not a distinct group. So even Ammoni can convert now to Judaism, no problem. So the Rambam is asking the question: so if the Chitim and the Girgashim and the Emorim and the Yevusim no longer exist, so how could this be considered an eternal mitzvah? Rambam says, you can only ask this question if you don't understand what I mean by a mitzvah that's not eternally applicable. No! It doesn't mean that there's an impediment for you to perform this mitzvah. It means that the mitzvah intrinsically has an end time. So mitzvahs that were only applicable in the desert, or only on Har Sinai, where God says we're not supposed to approach Har Sinai, so that's not a mitzvah now. If we would find Har Sinai, we'd be allowed to go on Har Sinai. But that was only that one time. Could go in mitzvah, shayi b'midvar, v'lo achagach b'aretz, v'chen mitzvah, hasavas nachala, shelo, ha'isa ela, oso ador, to change the allotted portions of Eretz Yisrael by a woman from one sheva marrying another sheva, and inheriting, if she was, let's say, only daughters, and then she inherited it, okay. So that was only in the first generation. Show bechilo kaaretz bichnisas and aretz. Yon elu heina shenikros eino noagos adoros. Aval kol mitzvah she nederes v'menu machmas she eino nimtzeis lanu shenucha lasosa. Aval lo shakosuv yisla osa bizman min azmanim. It doesn't mean that it applies to a mitzvah where the Torah says it only applies to certain times. Go in zoshal. Avdon Shiva Amin Vamalik Shakosu Tsivan Limchal Shmamul Avdam Laolam Bechodor Shanim Tsaim. That if that we would find somehow nowadays a pure blooded Amaleki or a pure blooded Yevusi, we would be required. It's not that there was an end point to the mitzvah, there's maybe an end point to the possibility of fulfilling it for external circumstances, but there's not an end point to the mitzvah. The kings, the early kings of Israel, finished the task. So only a few individuals fled and managed to be saved. We just don't know who's who. This does not mean that this is a mitzvah that's not applicable nowadays. It fully is applicable nowadays. We just or have an impediment to observing it. Understand this. You could kill them and you don't. So you have to be able to kill them without it being dangerous to you. So if you would come across a Girgashi in Chicago, and you would kill the Girgashi, again, it's not everybody agrees that you should do that. Maybe it's only in Israel. Okay, whatever. But assuming you're supposed to do that, come across a pure-blooded Girgashi, it shows you his whole family tree. He says, I'm absolutely Girgashi. There's no question about it. You killed the Girgashi, so possibly the government is going to administer to you the death penalty. So you're not required to perform the mitzvah. But you're only perform the mitzvah in a time, in a situation where you will not be in danger by performing the mitzvah. So the Minchas Chinuch points out that it's a very seemingly very odd that there's a p'tur here of pikuach nefesh, because the root of this mitzvah is war. So in war, people die. What do you mean p'tur pikuach nefesh? If there's in Melchemes mitzvah, I want to fulfill the requirement of Melchemes mitzvah, but I'm worried about pikuach nefesh. I'm afraid I'm going to die, so I'm not going to do the mitzvah. What do you mean? Then there's no war. What are you talking about? Of course you might die. Of course there's that's the nature of the mitzvah. So the Minchas Chinuch says maybe it's a little funny that he presents a p'tur of pikuach nefesh over here. Maybe it's not really correct. Maybe there's no p'tur here of pikuach nefesh. And we have this similar disagreement when we talk about in current Israeli politics trading land for peace. So according to some poskim, famously Rabbi Avadi Yosef, he says, no, you're allowed to give land of Eretz Yisrael to Arabs for the sake of pikuach nefesh, for saving Jewish lives. Whereas the starker, dati leumi rabbis, or other rabbis of other persuasions, say, absolutely not, that makes no sense. The whole point, if we're supposed to conquer Eretz Yisrael, we're supposed to live in Eretz Yisrael. It doesn't make sense to say, we're living in Eretz Yisrael, but if you threaten to kill us, then we'll give you some of the land. That makes no sense. We have to conquer the land. Of course, they might try to wage war against us, but that's the whole nature of war. Sovereign states can't, if someone, will come to the U.S. government and say, give me a parcel of land. I want to take over the state of Louisiana, and if not, I'm gonna kill a few members of Congress. So what's the government going to say? Well, pikuach nefesh. Of course you can have it. Enjoy. Please take Louisiana. Of course not. It's a sovereign nation has to exert its power even in the face of potentially some of the citizens being killed.
It won't even, the question is if it really would help save people's lives.
Right.
Because they want more land and more land. So they're not going to be saying, okay, if you gave that to me, fine, peace now.
So Rav Avadia would say that it depends on the assessment of the government. If the government says that this will really save lives, then you have a right to rely on them. That they could be right, they could be wrong, but you have to go by, they are de facto the experts on this topic.
They gave
back
Gaza, and it didn't really help.
Gaza,
yep. Right, Gaza. Okay, well, that's a technicality. Okay. But the point remains that even giving back land is not necessarily a guarantee of pikuach nefesh. It says later on in Sefer Dvarim, you shall not leave anyone alive. So we're going to look at there in Parsha Shoftim. Mitzvah Tav Chavav 426, Shelo Lachun al Ovdei Avodah Zarah. Not to show favor to those who worship idols. Shelo Nachmol al Ovdei Avodah Zarah, Velo Yasher Be'einenu Davar Mehem. That nothing about idol worshippers should be right in our eyes. Kelomar Shenarchik Machashavteinu Velo Yale Alpinu Shiyeh B'mishu Oved Avodah Zarah Davar To'eles. That we shouldn't say, maybe there's something nice about that idol worshipper. Well, then you start thinking, well, maybe worshipping idols isn't so bad. B'lo Yimala Che'en B'einenu B'shum Inyan. That he shouldn't arouse grace in our eyes in any way. Ad She'amru Raboseinu Zichron Levracha Sh'asr Lomar, to the extent that we're not allowed to say, Kama Noeh Goizeh. Oma Nechman Venoimu. This non-Jew is so nice and so good looking and so wonderful. You're not even allowed to say such a thing. So there may be a few caveats about this. So first of all, question here is, does this apply only to Ovdei Avodah Zarah or not? Mm-hmm. If it applies only to non-Jews who are Ovdei Avodah Zarah, so then this poses fewer problems for us. I mean, maybe Christianity is Avodah Zarah, okay. But if for Muslims, say, so you'd be allowed to say such a thing. But we normally assume that at least these aspects apply even to non-Jews who are not Ovdei Avodah Zarah, so you're not allowed to compliment them. But if your intention is to say, wow, I'm giving thanks to God that he created such beautiful people, and this is this non-Jew is really good looking, so then that is allowed, but you're not allowed to stam give compliments. That you're not allowed to give them favor. So the Rambam writes also, he adds, you're not allowed to be mishabeach ma'aseihem. That you're not allowed to say that what they do is so wonderful. So that's what some people say, is why you're not allowed to listen to non-Jewish music. Mm-hmm. Forgetting the issues of general music, which we discussed at some point. But by saying, oh, this is such a wonderful artist and such a wonderful... So it gets you inculcated with the idea that you can compliment and look to Goyim for inspiration, which is not necessarily spiritually beneficial.
Remember we tried to push Rav Schechter on this once?
Yeah.
And a whole bunch of us were like, oh, come on, so surely you can say blank, no. Sure you can say blank, no. Sure, I mean,
yeah.
It was like...
Mozart.
Yeah. I mean, it was amazing. I don't think we got him to concede a single thing.
Mm-hmm.
He
really?
Was sometimes, if it was for, you know, political necessity in the sense that
right.
He would be stoned or something if you didn't agree to this. It's like maybe. Otherwise,
well,
not even statements like Einstein. Oh, okay, he's not a good example.
Again, right.
X was a genius or something. Mm-hmm. He didn't go to say that. And of course, I said something like Raphael's a genius. You shouldn't be looking at that stuff anyway. So.
But he said that.
Yeah, I mean.
Well, for him it was a very blanket. Right. Well, if it only applies to Ovdei Avodah Zarah, so maybe you have some leeway. And if your intention is positive for good spiritual purposes, then maybe it's okay.
Well, if you're talking about somebody who's in power, like a king or something like that, and
mm-hmm.
you know, the advantage of Jewish people to go up and flatter him and you know say it's going.
Yeah. So no, that is allowed. That is allowed. It's the whole mitzvah is talking about things that are superfluous, as we'll get to in a second.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of additional levels of interpretation that Chazal read into this pasuk. So lo sechonim means also lo sitein lohem matnas chinam. You shouldn't give them something free. Ve'akol shoresh echad, that you're not allowed to give a non-Jew a free present. Not allowed to give gifts. So what does that mean? So there are a lot of exceptions to this as well. That is, the Gemara says that this only applies to a non-Jew who doesn't, again, assuming it applies even to not of the Avodah Zarah, but this applies to a non-Jew who doesn't know you. But if you give a present to a non-Jewish acquaintance, then that's permissible.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's not considered to be unnecessary, you know, just a totally free and out of the blue thing, but you expect something in return. Meaning a good relationship, or maybe gifts back, or who knows what. But if one example I was thinking of this, of what's a real matnas chinam, is on, let's say you're sitting next to someone on an airplane.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times, so there might be something in your meal, say, that you don't want. They gave you a piece of bread and you don't want to wash, whatever. So you turn to the non-Jew sitting next to you and say, hey, want this bread? You know, so... That might be a prohibition of lo sechonim manas chinam again.
You can give tzedakah, obviously, too.
Tzedakah, yes. Yes, the Sefer Chinuch will be getting to that. You're allowed to give tzedakah. But stam, a free present, that's all because of Darkei Shalom. So we want the good relationships between the Jewish and non-Jewish communities. So if they know that you give tzedakah to non-Jewish organizations or individual non-Jews, so then they'll give us tzedakah and there'll be better relationships. That's not chinam. That's not chinam. There, we want something out of it. But here, there's really, if you just give your bread to someone on the airplane, so you're not going to get anything in return. Unless you want some of their food. I don't know. That's kosher. I don't know.
Giving your super a tip.
Oh, so that's mutter. That's for sure mutter.
Right. Oh, you're kidding me? That's all you'll do. He'll pay attention to you next time you need something. Of course.
Right, that's for sure 100% mutter. We're giving the super money. Mishur she'a mitzvah. Oh no, we didn't. We missed the line. V'yushami da v'azamra lo sechanim lo siten lohem chein v'lo sasi. Don't give them any grace or favor. Mishur she'a mitzvah l'fisha tchilas kol ma'isim b'nei adam u'kviyas ha'machshava b'ma'isim. That before you start doing things, you have to think in your head that there's an advantage to it. You're going to start speaking about it. You're going to start doing stuff, and it works. It's really for our own benefit, this mitzvah. It's not that we have a spite against non-Jews, but it's so that we shouldn't think positively about non-Jews. We shouldn't be so anxious for them to love us. That since they're doing bad things, we want to distance ourselves. And if we start giving them presents and acting super nicely and giving compliments, so then we're going to start. It's going to start entering our heads that this is positive.
You're allowed to be polite, I hope.
Yes. Of course, this is not talking about. This is talking about again gratuitous compliments. If you go, get a poster of a. It's not to his face, whatever. But if you get a poster of a famous actor for your bedroom, a teenager, whatever, you get. So that's us there because it's like giving them a. You're saying that this is someone we should be looking up to and aspiring towards. Talking amongst your friends, this actor is so great, so talented, so. And then you learn that this actor has. Been married 7 times and is a terrible person and is not that okay. You could be a good person being married 7 times, but just is a terrible person and is not doesn't have good midos. And then you start thinking that there's something we should aspire to. Yeah.
Wait, does this apply to baseball players? Because otherwise, a lot of Jews would be come on, you can't say Joe DiMaggio or whoever is.
It's not Pusha. I'll tell you, it's not Pusha at all.
What we were trying to get out of our sector was a sort of technical recognition, like so and so is the best player today or whatever. Fill in the blank, engineering, whatever. And he was completely resistant.
A statement of fact, like so and so is currently the best baseball player.
He said, "Why are you making this statement?" if you're being pushed to for some reason, but like out of the blue, you're going to give credit? No. No, you shouldn't.
I hear.
Well, Rosh Hashanah, of course, famously, he lived a couple blocks from Yankee Stadium, when he was young, and everybody else thought, why is it wasted on him?
Well, yeah. I mean, Reb David Feinstein used to go to Yankee Stadium. He used to go to Yankee games, if that's what I heard. But there's a difference between you want to say it's us to go to a baseball game, maybe Bittul Torah, whatever. Okay, I don't know. People do things that are not 100% Torah all the time. But there's a difference between that and singling out a particular player for adoration, adulation. I think. The alkein. So the sefer chinuchit is that it's specifically for ovdei avodah zarah. Avalo lemi shein ovdei avodah zarah fal pishu omed beyuso lechol shkatzim uramasim shakol averos kigon ger toshav like a ger toshav. So it's interesting. He said like a ger toshav. So that seems to imply. That anyone who's like a ger toshav, for example, maybe a Muslim, you would be allowed because they're not of the avodah zarah. So Muslims, good Muslims, I think de facto do keep the sheva mitzvos b'nei noach. They have judgment systems and they don't sleep with arayas and they worship only one God and they don't curse God, etc., etc., etc. So that's why
they have jihad to kill all the non-believers.
That's not exactly true. Jihad doesn't mean that you kill all non-believers. In Islam, there's a concept of a second-class citizen, that they believe that Jews and Christians, in theory, unless they get in their way, should be protected. They would just have to agree to live as second-class citizens in a Muslim-dominated world. That's why the State of Israel is so offensive to them. that the whole Muslim theology is that Muslims have to control, not that they necessarily have to kill everyone else. But if it's extremely offensive, the idea that Jews, who in Muslim theology are supposed to be dhimmi, it's called second class citizen, and accept Muslim domination, or have the chutzpah instead to think that they could control part of a territory that has historically been controlled by Muslims, at least in recent thousand years or so. So the Rambam says, an Oved Avodah Zarah, you're not allowed to give a matnas chinam, but a ger toshav, you are allowed. The question is, what about in the middle? So Rambam doesn't explain clearly what the story with people who are in the middle, like a Muslim. But here the Sefer Chinuch does seem to imply that a Muslim would be okay. You don't accept the ger toshav, but nevertheless, there might be still a de facto, sort of quasi ger toshav. If you give praise to Ovdei Avodah Zarah and their deeds, so lasi binyan shimsa shvach yeser meod leumaseinu bitoch shvacham, that you're, because you're praising them and you say, oh, but the Jews do it even better, then that would be okay. Over alav zev, ain't what malchus of yishen v'mayis, you don't get malchus, it's there's no action, just speech. Well, ancho godol meod yosibol etakolam meruba she'ein lo tashlumen, that nevertheless it's an extremely bad avera, because it's going to lead your mind to places where it shouldn't go, and it's going to destroy your religiosity. Gedvarim yardu lefamim b'chadri beten hashomim, that you're going to really internalize these thoughts and really think that these people should be emulated. V'chol yodei adas yavin zeh, if you understand properly, you will understand this concept.